If by some miracle you're listening to this, that could either mean one of two things. Either we made it out, or I'm long gone by now. Whichever it is, my name is Jesse, and this is my story. Ben was crying. Tears trickled down Lenny's face as well, but she held it together. I sped down the bumpy dirt road, constantly checking my rear view to see if I saw any lights approaching. Nothing yet. We made it to the pavement and pushed the gas down as far as it could go. 70, 80, 90 miles an hour. The van began to rattle, our belongings tipping over. Hey, slow down just a bit. I don't see anybody behind us, and if this thing breaks down, then we're really screwed, Lenny reminded me. Hey, get in your seat and buckle up, she then demanded of Ben. God damn it, I yelled as I punched the steering wheel. We never put the gas in the tank after we got back from the diner. The tanks are still full, but strapped to the back. But we still have gas, right? Lenny questioned with concern. No, not much. How much is not much? I don't know exactly. This gauge has always been a bit bouncy, but it's saying... Just then the van began to sputter out, pushing us just far enough to get through the only space available between two dead cars. Here, lock this door behind me, I said as I popped the gas cap door open and jumped out of the van. It was completely dark now, and I knew that they weren't far behind. I got the tanks unstrapped and began pouring them in. You never realize how slow pouring gas from a jerry can is, or in comparison how fast the pumps at a station fill you up, until you need it the most. I finished the first one, which was the 5-gallon tank. Then reached for the 2-gallon tank next. As I began to let the gas glug out of the can, I saw two dim headlights in the distance. In case this was something that needed to be mentioned, this van doesn't exactly pick up speed very well, and as we just saw, it can't maintain a high speed for too long either before rattling. Thinking quick, I cut my losses and threw the tank down, and sprinted down the street in the direction that we just came from. The muffled screams from Lenny and Bennett rang from the van.
Stop! What are you doing? Come back!
I approached the dead car just as the headlights were getting larger. We were in the deep country now, so the roads were a narrow single-lane road in each direction and lacking any shoulder, surrounded by a ditch on both sides. I ripped open the driver's side door and jumped in. Being a self-proclaimed jack-of-all-trades came into play yet again when I knew that there was going to be no chance that I can get this car in neutral without a key. Remembering back to my first two cars of my own, or, well, frankly how cheap they were, I remember that there is always a manual bypass to the ignition, a little plastic cap somewhere next to the shift. I felt around until I felt it, and grabbed my pocket knife out of my pocket. I flipped open the cap with a small knife, pressed the release, and threw it into neutral. Quickly hopping back out, I used the slight slope of the road to push that car in connection to the other one to block the road. With a final push, the headlights met with the taillights of its counterpart with a crash and breaking the lights, effectively blocking the road. This should at least slow them down enough to give us enough time to not outrun them, but lose them. I hustled back to our ride, jumping in and getting an earful from Lenny.
I blocked the road. Let's go, we have to look for the next block to turn down, I said as I was catching my breath.
We turned down the very next street, and we were met with a series of other options to take. We made a few random turns, and found ourselves with no other light source than the clear sky and the moon. We came across an old center console boat atop of a trailer stashed out in a dim field and raced towards it. I pulled along the backside tight enough to clip and fold in my driver's side mirror and then shut off the van. With the weather still around the low 50s, I didn't want my muffler letting out any exhaust fumes.
Everybody stay low, I said as I prepared my revolver with a few rounds to top it off. You're taking this one. It's got half a clip left. It's one of their-
No,
Lenny interrupted. Take it and keep it pointed towards the floor and don't move it unless I say so. No exceptions, I demanded. She grabbed it, fully understanding that she needed it in this case, in case we were found. We waited there for 4 hours without any sign of them. We needed to move. Lenny pulled out the paper map that we found at the diner, and we drove until we came across an intersection that had both street signs still intact. She was able to locate where we were, and this time, we opted to head in the opposite direction of any sort of community. We wanted to escape these people at all costs. We drove for about an hour into farm country surrounded by some heavy tree lines. It was around this time that I looked down at my gas gauge and realized that we were almost out of gas yet again. I couldn't leave us completely empty in case we had to hightail it out of any certain situation again, so it was time that we pick our spot. The tame darkness was only interrupted by an occasional small farmhouse separated by hundreds of acres. We drove across a field and found an old rickety barn standing atop a hill. The air was silent, and it didn't appear to be any signs of life anywhere near. "Let's squeeze in here for now, at least until dawn and we can reassess." We pulled in over the rocky terrain and over some random trash and parked along the rear outside wall. The brown wooded barn was upright, but not without its many signs of years unattended. The loft above was still intact, but had a gaping hole to the outside near the peak. The barn doors that used to block the entrance that we just entered through were long gone, but the extra scrap wood around would suffice as a door for now. It was nice to have shelter again, but the feeling of not knowing what was outside the barn was unsettling. The next morning when the sun rose, I was first up to check out our new area. I peeked outside the barn to see rolling hills of open land, subdivided by tree lines, grass that was yellowed and long overgrown, and two tire tracks marking the route my van took to get here. That was cause for concern, so I picked a track and walked the line back to the street using my feet to plush up the grass again to limit its visibility. When I got down to the road, I checked my surroundings to get a better picture of where we were, but it was still as far as I could tell. This should do for now. The lack of houses and town stores left us very limited on scavenging, but then again, that hasn't proven to be all that successful in the past anyway. Maybe this was for the best. Hell, who knows, maybe we could make this our new home and focus on growing some food instead. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Right now, we need to lay low and let the tension settle between us and those rednecks, so hopefully they'll set aside their fixation on us. On my way back to the barn, I jumped over to the second tire track and did the same. Later on that day, we heard a large flock of birds fly overhead and swoop down into the field not 40 yards from the new barn. They were geese, and there was no less than 30 of them. Before the end of civilization, they would have been the same birds that you were forced to slow down for because they never seemed to be in all that much of a rush to get out of the way of oncoming traffic. But now? Now they're a great source of food. Of meat. I hollered over to Ben for him to hurry out, and that would prove to be both a good idea and bad. Ben, of course, became super excited as I explained that that could be the next thing that we could try to catch. But with his excitement came the mindlessness of our surroundings, or lack of knowledge of them so far. We had to figure out a way, other than our pistols of course, to catch a goose. Ideally without scaring the rest of them from ever coming back. So, we first decided to see how skittish they were by just walking close to them. Yeah, we couldn't get within 10 yards of them before they started heading the other way, but at a relatively slow pace. That gave us an idea. What if Ben and Lenny began running towards them, essentially creating a funnel where I would be hiding, and before they can get too high off the ground, I would attempt to jump on one of them. We practiced our game plan a few times, mostly just for the fun of running around again. The day following came around, and wouldn't you know it, we must have been in the lucky field because a flock came swooping in once again. There was plenty of food and bugs for them to feast on, so it really wasn't any secret why they kept coming back. But according to Ben, it was the lucky field we had to thank for that. So that's what we chalked it up to. "Dad, they're back! Come on, Dad, they're back!" "Okay, okay, bud. Let them get settled in so we can catch them by surprise. In a few minutes, I'll sneak around to that tree line there, and you and Mommy get set to chase them towards me." Once again, his excitement was upwards of a 10, and that was always something that lit up our camp. Then our plan went off without a hitch. I must admit, I was a little shocked that that plan worked, but just as they began getting some altitude from their scramble, I leapt out and knocked one back down to the ground. Before it could even finish rolling on the ground, I dove down and got it in my grips. "I got it! I got one! We got one! All right, great job, guys!" I screamed from across the field,
careful not to let the bird suffer, and careful not to let Bennett see me dispose of the animal, I turned my back to them and quickly snapped its neck. I went trotting over to them to show the new hefty bird that we all just worked together to catch. Now we needed a fire pit to cook it over. So that evening, I worked on collecting enough rocks and miscellaneous barn wood to cook over. I plucked the bird and used my fillet knife to gut it. After removing the innards from the bird, I tossed them back into the field to see what else we could attract. We ate more than half that goose, and smoked the rest in strips similar to jerky. I once watched a show many years back, one of those survival shows where you know they're turning off the cameras and staying in a hotel for the night, but whatever. The survivor dude demonstrated on how to smoke meat and store it for later, so I gave it a shot. Beyond full, we completed our nighttime routine and headed right to bed. The next morning, the others were still sleeping when the sun rose, presumably from the food coma that they entered last night, so I got up to collect more wood that I could find. It was a real nice morning. The sunrise peeked over the rolling hills of the field, the weather was beginning to warm up some, and it was quiet and peaceful. I got lost in a daydream of what used to take place here on this old farm, and what it must have been like to pour a mug of black coffee and make your rounds checking in on all your animals each morning. Or how neighbors from down that long road would probably stop by asking for some advice on a sick animal, or what cow feed is best. And how all of that slowly disappeared, starting with the frequent neighbor visits once the virus hit. Then how feed must have gotten harder to come by, and the internal struggle to let your animals wander free and fight for themselves, or keep pushing through. Y'all enjoying your stay here so far? A voice came from behind a tree. I must have wandered some bit carelessly as I was in a fog. I was genuinely enjoying my morning walk, and the voice immediately threw me back in this crappy reality. My mouth remained slightly opened as I scoured the tree line for the source. Now stay calm, son. If I was going to do something to you, I would have done it days ago when you first got here. He stepped out from the tree line and into the open. He was an older man, high 60s to early 70s, with a red checkered flannel, worn khaki pants, pulled together with some brown suspenders. All of these details came second to the rifle that he had in his hands, pointed towards the ground. I'm sorry, sir. If this is your land, we don't want any more trouble. We will leave immediately, I said calmly as I showed him my palms. More problems? He questioned. And you can put your hands back. I don't expect you to reach for that revolver that you have stuffed in your back of your belt there. It was clear that this man has been watching us, but why hasn't he made himself known? No, sir. Like I said, we don't want any problems. We were just seeking some refuge from that old barn back there. My barn, you mean? On my property? Not far from my house, which is right down there, just past that tree line. You guys got here real late one night, you must have. Because y'all weren't here during my evening rounds, but made yourself at home real quick when I spotted you here the next morning. Yeah, that's right, we were... Why did you let us stay? Why didn't you kick us out right away? Or at least let us know that you were here? Maybe you haven't looked around in a while. But if there are any people left, they aren't always willing to have a civil conversation. I get the upper hand by learning who you are first. Bullets don't judge, they just kill, one side or the other. So if I don't have to use them, I choose not to. But don't you dare make a mistake, I'm not afraid to use them. No, that shouldn't be necessary, sir. This is your land, and we don't want any trouble. I'm sure you saw the rest of them, so you know I'm here with my family. I'm just trying to keep them safe. I see your wedding ring. You must have a family too, so you know what it's like. He paused and looked down at his weathered finger. That's right, I do. Maybe more closely than you think, he said quietly as he swung his rifle around his shoulder. Now, before I even ask your name, son, I'm gonna need us both to sit right here where we stand. And have you explain to me what you meant when you said the words, more trouble. I'm a man that pays attention to detail, and you'll learn that quickly.
whether that's for your benefit or not. Well, that's fine and all, but I need to know that you're not just keeping me here to separate me from mine and have them vulnerable for whoever you're here with. Katie, Jack, and Madeline, those are my people. And Madeline is 7, so you're down to 2 people of concern. If you can't handle talking here for the next few minutes, then that's your prerogative, and I'll have to see you leave immediately. That's fine, but we're gonna have to switch spots so I can aim my sights towards the barn and keep an eye out on them. That's fair enough. We swapped positions and took a seat on some fallen logs. Now go on, son, explain. Yes, we've had some trouble. We left out of New York a long time ago in my van to get out of the big city populations because it just became mayhem. We drove all the way until we landed here, back maybe a few hundred miles. We stayed by the riverbank making it our camp for a while. But when our supplies began to run low, I was forced to go scavenge abandoned places. That's where we came across some men who have been chasing us ever since. Then they found where we stayed and attacked us and tried killing us for the 3rd time. And did you retaliate? Not by choice, but to get my family back from where they grabbed and were taking them to. I'm like you, I don't want problems. I want a place to call home and raise my family in peace. I'm not a fighter, I'm a protector. And how many of them have you killed? Silence filled the gap between us. Answer the question, son. Apparently, not enough.